I have made a decision to postpone the execution of Timothy McVeigh for 1 month from this day so that the execution would occur on June the 11th, 2001.
That's Attorney General John Ashcroft speaking at a press conference in Washington yesterday. This week, the FBI announced a blunder in its handling of evidence from the 1995 Oklahoma City bombing. The Bureau failed to hand over a number of documents to Mr. McVeigh's defense lawyers in that case. Mr. McVeigh was scheduled to die next Wednesday for his role in the explosion. Well, Dan Shore is away this week, and John Heilman of Wired magazine joins us from San Francisco. Hi, John.
Hi, Melinda. How are you?
Just fine. Thanks for being with us. This is an embarrassing situation for the FBI. The timing of it also could not have been much more dramatic. FBI contends that none of those documents would have changed Mr. McVeigh's conviction. I'm wondering what this does mean for Timothy McVeigh.
Well, it really does depend, Melinda, on what's in those documents. I mean, there's 3,000 pages, which are primarily made up, we're told, of interview material from the FBI's field agents with witnesses to that Oklahoma bombing in 1995. At a minimum, we're looking at a significant delay. This was, you know, the first federal execution in many decades, and it was proceeding with kind of lockstep efficiency toward the execution on Wednesday. Now we've got Ashcroft saying that the date is pushed back to June 11th. There's almost no one, I think, who thinks that that date actually will hold. It will take, we think, McVeigh's lawyers considerably longer to assess what's in those pages, those documents, and whether or not they provide grounds for revisiting the question of his conviction or of his death sentence. So far, of course, you know, McVeigh has resisted appeals. He not only has taken the position of acknowledging his responsibility, his guilt, his culpability in the Oklahoma bombing, but he's tried in some ways to speed his own execution. He hasn't really tried to fight this thing and to delay. The question that we have now is whether there are something in those documents that would change his disposition on that. And if there is something, I mean, even if the FBI is telling the truth, which it almost certainly is, that there's nothing that's going to exonerate McVeigh in this case, the question is whether there's anything that would perhaps minimize his culpability just on the margins, enough perhaps to warrant a death sentence or to warrant a life sentence rather than a death sentence, or at least warrant his sense that that's what he's entitled to, and whether they decide to drag this thing out. So we could be looking at many, many months now if they decide to press an appeal. We'll know a lot more as we know a little more about what's in those documents.
And what do you think this means for the FBI?
Well, it's a big black eye, I think, for Louis Free. He's on his way out the door, as you know. He just announced recently that he's going to be resigning in June. I mean, this is a guy who saw himself as a Hoover-like figure. I mean, a man who I think thought he's been in the Bureau since he was about 25 years old, back in the 1970s, and I think began to think of himself as someone who could construct a long life tenure of some kind. And he's presided over the past few years in the largest expansion in the Bureau's history, but his record now looks incredibly spotty. This is one in a chain of embarrassments, right? From the Robert Hansen recent controversy over, you know, Robert Hansen being discovered, a Bureau agent being discovered as having been a spy for the Soviet Union, the Richard Jewell matter, where the FBI pursued the wrong guy in the Atlanta Olympic bombings, and then, of course, Free having pressed very hard for the indictment of Wen-Ho Lee wrongly. So I think basically it's a pretty embarrassing finale for him, but one that is not inconsistent with a rather spotty record for the director of the FBI.
Well, I want to turn to the budget, because this week Congress passed a budget proposal that includes a huge tax cut, $1.35 trillion over the next 11 years, and the president seems to be getting a lot of credit for this. Justly so, in your view?
Well, I think it's gone incredibly well for him so far. This has been the easy part, but it is fair to say that he has had to accept very few compromises so far. What he campaigned on and what he has gotten through in terms of this budget document are pretty close. I mean, he's not had to accept a lot of compromises as yet. But with taxes, of course, the devil really, really always is in the details, and this is not going to be an exception. I mean, these details that lie ahead are pretty devilish. There's a big train wreck ahead over kind of four big things, right? Cutting marginal rates, the marginal tax rates, particularly in the upper brackets, abolishing the estate tax. Those are two big priorities for conservatives. Also the child tax credit and then the deductibility of college tuition, which are bigger priorities for Democrats. So you're going to see, even among Democrats who accepted the notion of a big tax cut, they're going to be fighting for their priorities. Republicans are going to be fighting for their priorities. And indeed, even within the Republicans, among the conservative ranks, there's incredible tension already breaking out over things that seem like small things, like whether the top rate is going to be lowered from the current 39.6% all the way down to 33%, which is what the president campaigned on and still wants, or what some other more moderate Republicans are now saying they're willing to accept, which would be more like 36 or 37%. Mm-hmm. This is going to be kind of a messy fight, and it's going to be one that's going to, especially in the eyes of conservatives, that's going to be a real testing ground for George Bush and how much he's willing to fight for the most primal of Republican principles, which is, you know, cutting those tax rates and the what they call the death tax.
Right. I'm wondering about energy, too, because yesterday the president gave a press conference in which he said that solving the energy crisis depends on that tax cut. And I wonder if the administration is looking like it's scrambling a bit here for solutions to energy.
Yeah, there's a little chicken with the head cut off kind of quality to this whole thing. I mean, Bush is in a very difficult position because, of course, he's got here in the energy crisis basically a long-term problem, that's not really of his making, but that has a real sharp short-term pinch to it, right? I mean, as the summer approaches, and we've got out here in California already, we've got, you know, the question, as you know, of, you know, rolling blackouts. Mm-hmm. We've got $2 a gallon gasoline. It's looking like the 1970s again in terms of this notion that we have a capital E energy, capital C crisis on our hands. And so here's the administration trying to figure out something that will alleviate the short-term pain and not make it look as though it's responsible for what the pain that the American public is feeling this summer, making it look like the administration is doing something. And so Bush has to turn to some kind of a solution. And what he's got in his hand is this hammer, you know, which mm-hmm. is the tax cut. He points to it. It's ridiculous as a matter of policy, of course, because most of the people who are going to be hit hardest by the energy crisis are people in the lower and middle income brackets. Those people won't be affected at all by the administration's tax cut proposal. So as a matter of policy, it's silly. As a matter of politics, it's desperate, but at least you can kind of understand where they're coming from.
Yeah, well, yeah. John, in the last minute or so here, I want to talk about the missile shield as well, because this is what the president is trying to sell overseas, the idea of a missile shield. What do you think that response has been so far?
Well, I mean, abroad, I mean, I've just come back from a few weeks in Europe, and it's sort of extraordinary. I mean, I think the Europeans are allies who they are sort of shocked, I think, not just by the fact that the administration is willing to go ahead and do things that the Europeans disagree with, but they're shocked by the sort of blatant disregard that the administration seems to show to their views. It's almost like the administration is snubbing their noses at the allies. It's a very interesting thing that's happening now in foreign policy. This is a team that was supposed to be incredibly sure of itself, much more so than the Clinton administration. They were all these kind of foreign policy veterans, and yet they've come in and whereas we used to think that the big problem for American foreign policy might be that America would slip into isolationism, now it looks much more like that American foreign policy, we're looking like we may be isolated, which is to say we're kind of this, we're looked upon in some ways as being completely out of step with the world community on so many issues in foreign policy. And this is just the most visible, the missile shield.
Well, John Holliman, thanks so much for joining us this week.
Always glad to be here.